Sunday, Fox, 4:25 p.m. We got a big game for you. Rams in Dallas to face the Cowboys. Could be a get-right game for Dallas if they can get out of their own way. Rams have won two straight. Cowboys have lost three straight. Dak Prescott knows just how important this game is for his team.
I mean, we got to get a win. Yeah, we've got to get a win, and we got to play well. Simple as that. I mean, yeah, according to the playoffs and all that, it doesn't, I guess. But if we want to give ourselves a chance to win, and to win as we finish this season out, and to win in that tournament as you get there, you've got to get momentum going. And momentum is something serious. We can get it on our side. This has been a streaky team in years. So you got to get that first one to get the second one. That's kind of just the mindset of focus on the day. Let's focus on now. Let's focus on this week. I'm not worried about the rest, and we will when that comes.
A lot of words out of Dak there. What do you want to see, Chris Canty, from the Cowboys to make you believe they can go on a deep playoff run? Is there anything they can do to make you believe that?
Well, a good place to start is being able to beat a team with a winning record. So far, they're 0-4 with teams above 500. And, you know, the Los Angeles Rams present an opportunity for the Cowboys to do that in their building in Arlington this Sunday. So I guess that's what I'm looking for them to be able to put together a complete performance top to bottom in this game. But, Nick, as bad as the Dallas Cowboys have been playing, losing three straight, being 6-7, second week of December, this is still not a game that the Cowboys have to win.
And that's a key point. Explain that to people.
This is a game that the Rams have to win. For them, the playoffs have already started now. Good on them. They've won three of the last four. But the Cowboys, because the Eagles are 6-7 and the Cowboys beat the Eagles earlier in Dallas, it's a situation where all they have to do is be able to go on the road in week 16, beat the Eagles in Philadelphia, and then beat the Washington Redskins. If they can do that, they're going to be NFC East champs. Now, the Los Angeles Rams don't have that luxury. They're chasing the Minnesota Vikings for that second wild card in the NFC. And I really look at it as a situation where they have to win out, and they need some help from the Minnesota Vikings. They're going to need them to lose one of three games. I think they're on the road against the Chargers. Yep. And then they've got division opponents. They got the Bears and the Packers. So we'll see what happens with that. But, I mean, right now for the Dallas Cowboys, you just want to see a solid performance from that team top to bottom. Offense, defense, special teams complementing one another. But Nick, I don't have any evidence that they're going to be able to do that this Sunday.
I totally agree with you. I think your point that the Cowboys don't need this game is a critical one. They can improve, whether they win the division at 7-9 or at 9-7. They're the 4 seed either way. All that matters to them is the Eagles game, and then the Washington game is more important than the Rams game, because if they end up splitting with the Eagles, it's about divisional records, so tiebreakers and things like that. And if you know that, and if I know that, they know that. And this is not a Cowboys team that, to me, has shown any ability where if they know this game is not quite as important, but doesn't matter, every game just as important, we're going to focus on the Patriot mantra of on to Cincinnati. Cowboys don't have, to me, that mental fortitude. They haven't shown it. So I do think it's important that they don't need the game as far as how I expect them to play. But to answer your question, Jenna, Cowboys can win this game 45-0. They won't, but if they win this game, they could win this game 45-0, and I would not believe they are Super Bowl contenders. You are what you are through the first 13 games of the season. It might be a mirage through 4 weeks. Maybe it's a mirage through 8 weeks. And I know last year the Cowboys argued, well, look at who we were the final 8 weeks of the season. Yeah, understand, I get it. But you also, in the playoffs, showed you weren't exactly who you were the final 8 weeks of the season when you struggled in the first round against a Seattle team that had no game plan offensively whatsoever and then got beat handily by the Los Angeles Rams. So I do not believe in this Cowboys team. One game against a Rams team that I also think is a good but not far from a great team is not going to change my opinion of it. And I don't think what we're going to see from the Cowboys, what you see from teams at times when they know their coach is on the hot seat, which is, let's win this, let's show the world we still love our coach. Let's show the world we got Jason Garrett's back. They've had the opportunity for that since the Patriots game, because that's when Jerry Jones put the real pressure on Jason Garrett. And how did they respond the next 2 weeks? By folding in games against inferior competition, allegedly inferior competition, where they had 7-0 lead. So, no, I don't believe the Dallas Cowboys all of a sudden are going to put it together and look like the team we thought they could be in September.
Kenny, what do you think the message has been or is to players this week in that Dallas locker room? What do you think the consensus is with what the management and what coaches and everything is saying to these guys before they lead up to the Sunday's game?
Well, the players are just trying to figure out why we can't win with all the talent that we have on this roster. Coming into this year, we said it, the Dallas Cowboys are one of the most talented teams in the National Football League. So why are they underachieving? Why are we sitting here at week 15 with them having a sub-500 record? Well, the only thing that you can point to is the coach. I mean, at some point, if your team is not playing up to the expectations, you have to look at coaching and seeing whether or not Jason Garrett is putting his players routinely in positions to be able to do what they do best. And the Cowboys, for whatever reason, haven't executed. Now, I hate to put all of this at the feet of the head coach, but that's where you have to start, Nick. It has to start with Jason Garrett. And so with Jerry Jones having Jason come into the season as a lame duck coach, you were trying to figure out whether or not this team would be able to respond and answer the question of whether or not Jason Garrett could coach his team at the highest levels, get into the playoffs and win some playoff games and compete for championships. And to this point in this season, we don't have anything tangible to point to say that Jason Garrett is capable of doing that. This team is 0-6 against teams that are over 500. When you get to the playoffs, you're going to be playing against teams with a winning record. So I just don't see the Dallas Cowboys as that team. And we have to point to Jason Garrett as the reason why this team hasn't realized expectations.
And Jason Garrett deserves the lion's share of the blame, and he's going to get fired at the end of the year. But it also should be noted the last few weeks, that Dak Prescott MVP contender season has gone off the rails a bit. Scored 9 points against the Patriots, and I understand the Patriots are an extraordinary defense. You got up 7-0 on Buffalo, the offense goes into hibernation. You get up 7-0 on Chicago, the offense goes into hibernation. That's problematic. Dak against teams with a winning record this year. 8 touchdowns, 7 picks, and a passer rating below 85. Going into this year, I had the Cowboys missing the playoffs, despite all the talent, because I didn't believe in the coach, and I didn't believe in the quarterback. Now, Dak has been better than I thought he would be going into this season over the course of the entire season. But the last few weeks, he has not been. He needs to play his best game against a good team. People can say, oh, look at his numbers against Green Bay. Yeah, against Green Bay, once they were down 31-3, Dak started absolutely dealing. But that didn't really count, and it doesn't really matter. And so you need Dak to play the way he has played against the awful opponents, against a good opponent this week. And that Rams team, by the way, since the acquisition of Jalen Ramsey, that pass defense gotten a little bit better, even though they shipped out Marcus Peters, who's been exceptional with Baltimore. I'd like to see how Dak plays, because that to me is more important for the Cowboys than whatever happens the rest of this season. You're going to pay Dak an astronomical amount of money this offseason. How good is he? It was always Dak versus Wentz was the debate. Well, both these guys, well, Wentz underachieved this year. Mm-hmm. Dak underachieved, I would argue, last season. Is that really a worthwhile debate if neither one of them is a top 12 quarterback in football? Mm-hmm. And that's the question. Dak was playing like it. He hasn't the last month.
Maybe we all misjudge just how talented this Dallas Cowboys team really is. All right, let's get back to last night's game. Thursday Night Football, Ravens beating the Jets. Along the way, Lamar Jackson breaking Michael Vick's single-season rushing record for a quarterback. He also showed off his arm, throwing 5 touchdown passes, giving him 33 on the year. That ties Vinny Testaverde's team record. Lamar talked about the passing mark after the game, said he was proud of it, but as he does with everything else, kind of shied it off and said we've got something much bigger to worry about here. Nick, which is the more impressive feat? The rushing record or the passing touchdown record for Lamar?
To me, it's definitely the rushing record. And I know some might say, and I don't know what Candy's going to say, that because there were questions about his ability to throw the football, it should be the passing mark. But a few things here. One is Lamar's passing touchdowns have been really inflated by him being exceptional against awful teams. First game of the year, his third 5-touchdown game of the year. And that's not taking anything away from him. It's simply saying that the bad teams have had no ability to stop them in either direction. But the rushing mark has come against everybody. He has been effective running the football. You play the Niners, no problem. I'll run on them. Play Seattle, I'll run on them. New England, I'll run on them. And so his ability to week in, week out, avoid the big hit. I understand on the oddly enough, ironically, if you will, the play he set the record on, he took a shot now. Mm-hmm. But he typically does just what you're seeing right there. Get as many yards as he can and then beat you to the sideline. That's where the speed's so great. Get as many yards as you can, beat you to the sideline, avoid the big hit, and beat a record, Canny, that I would have thought was close to unbreakable. Mm-hmm. Because Mike Vick at that point, when he set that record, was the player people alleged Lamar was going to be. A running back playing quarterback who occasionally throws the football. To have that record in a season where he also is likely to lead the entire NFL in touchdown passes, those two things in unison, to me, are spectacular. But that rushing record will stand for years and years and years, unless he breaks it himself moving forward. So to me, that's the more impressive feat.
No, it has to be the rushing record. I mean, when you look at throwing 30 touchdown passes in a season, if you're a quality quarterback, if you're a top 10 quarterback, and you're healthy for the entire year, you're probably going to throw right around 30 touchdown passes. So I don't think that's as impressive, especially in today's game. When Vinny T did it in 96, it was a different game. Yep. In terms of the rules now, the way that the receivers can be impacted by defenders, I mean, you're limited in terms of your options to neutralize the passing game. But as far as quarterbacks go running the football, once that quarterback gets outside of the pocket, you can treat him like a running back by and large. And the fact that Lamar Jackson has over 1,100 yards rushing, that's unbelievable.
Insane. It should be impossible.
It should be.
He could have, if he were to play, I don't know if he's going to play the full season, but if he has played, the fact that it's on the board that we could have a quarterback with a 1,300 yard rushing season, which is most years good enough to be top five rushing for the entire NFL, it seems it's Madden-esque. I know we've talked about his Madden speed rating, and Mike Vick was very funny. Mike Vick said, "I don't mind him beating my rushing record.
Lamar
I don't like
Jackson.
That he beat my speed rating in Madden." They're Madden numbers in real life is what we're seeing.
But given what we thought about Lamar Jackson coming into this season, how impressive is the throwing mark, is the passing mark, is the touchdown mark, the fact that he will throw the ball sometimes before running it?
Well, to me, that's the most impressive part, and the fact that he can actually win from the well. He can throw the ball down the field with accuracy from the pocket. You saw him do it last night on the Marquise Brown touchdown throw and the Seth Roberts touchdown throw, which was 2nd and 20. Jenna, the fact that he's capable of doing that now, defenses don't have any good answers in terms of how to defend Lamar Jackson. If you line up and you play zone coverage, well, guess what? He's got the football IQ now to know where the holes are and the ability to throw the ball with accuracy in those tight windows. And if you're in man coverage, well, now you have another issue because you have defenders running with their backs turned. If he takes off, guess what? It's going to be an explosive play in the run game. So, I mean, there are no good ways to defend a quarterback with the athletic ability that Lamar Jackson has, coupled with the football IQ. And now you've seen him clean up some of the issues that he's had with his delivery, his footwork within the pocket. I mean, he's the most dangerous threat that we have at the quarterback position right now.
It's impressive. I don't find it that surprising. I thought the narrative at the end of last season was far too colored by the playoff game. He was awful for three quarters in the playoff game, no denying it. But during the season, Warren Sharp, who's one of the smartest football people out there, did a great job breaking it down. His numbers compared favorably to rookie quarterbacks historically, just passing, remove the running. I watched him at Louisville. That is a pro-style offense from Bobby Petrino. Let's pretend he never ran the football. So take away over his final 2 years, his 3,000 yards rushing and his 39 rushing touchdowns. The year he won the Heisman, he threw for 3,500 yards and 30 touchdowns. Threw for him. He followed that up by throwing for 3,600 yards and 27 touchdowns. His completion percentage was like 2% lower than you would have liked it to be, given the number of drops and the quality of receivers. He needed to clean up the accuracy a bit. And by the way, he still needs to clean up the accuracy a bit. But I thought the narrative coming in that this guy is just an athlete has always been wrong. And his mom, who got so much criticism for being his agent, read the stories about when he was in high school. They tried to send him back to return a punt. His mom said, "No, you are not." They tried to have him play safety on a Hail Mary. "No, you are not." His mom's been right about this all along. My son's a quarterback, and he can throw the damn football, and he's showing it every week, which to me makes the rushing record all the more impressive, because Vic, as much as I really respect what Vic accomplished, when he set that rushing record, he couldn't throw the football. Mm-hmm. Not like this. He had a great deep ball, but he was not the passer he was in Philly. He was running out of necessity. Lamar's running as one of the arrows in his quiver, which makes it so impressive.
talk about the Patriots now. They've dropped three of their last five games, something we're not used to saying about this New England team. Well, this Sunday, they're on to Cincinnati, and Tom Brady isn't taking the Bengals lightly. He knows how important this game is.
I know it hasn't all been perfect, but we're in a decent position. We're at 10-3, and we have the biggest game of the year coming up this coming week. So every year has its adversity, its challenges, and this year we've had our fair share. But that's what makes you tougher. That's what makes you more mentally tough, certainly.
Kenny, I know they're playing the Bengals. I know the Bengals have one win. But do the Patriots need to go out there and absolutely dominate this Cincinnati team for you to feel good about them moving forward?
Well, Jenna, even if they dominate this Bengals team, I'm not going to feel like the Patriots have figured out all of their problems. I'm not going to feel like that offense is finally turning the corner. The Bengals are statistically one of the worst defenses in the National Football League. But in the last four games, they've played a lot better. They haven't allowed an opponent to score over 20 points. But in looking at the issues that the Patriots have had on the offensive side of the ball, even if N'Keal Harry has a big day or Jacoby Myers has a big day, Philip Dorsett produces in the passing game, I'm still not going to feel like the Patriots have answered all of the questions that we have, because I want to see them do it against quality competition. Because for the Patriots, it's not about being able to get into the playoffs. It's about competing for championships, especially in the twilight of Tom Brady's career. So I think that the one thing that can come out of this game as a positive for that Patriots team and for Tom Brady and that offense specifically is those young guys being able to build some confidence. If they can go out there and be productive, maybe that confidence can carry over into the games that they got coming up against, you know, division opponents in the Buffalo Bills and the Dolphins. Yeah, exactly, the division opponents. So if they can do that and create some momentum moving toward the playoffs, then I think that would be a good sign. But I don't think they can answer any questions definitively with this game on Sunday.
If they were playing the Bills, I think they could, because the Bills have been proven to be a good team, and the Bills gave them trouble the first time they played. But because they're playing the worst team in football, unfortunately for the Patriots, this is a game where the only headlines that can come out are bad. If they beat the Bengals 30-0, is anyone going to say, okay, New England's back?
No.
No. We have seen them annihilate bad teams. They beat Miami by 43. They beat the Jets by 16 and 33. They beat Washington by 26. They beat the Giants by 21. Like, we know that this defense alone can force awful teams into where the defense will outscore the opposing team's offense by itself. And then the offense can lean on you and make the margin decisive at the end. So as long as New England comes out of this game healthy, that's healthy as they go into it, that's all you want to look for in this game. I don't think you can build on anything in a game like this against this type of opponent. I also don't want to give New England credit, because almost no matter who they were playing this week, it would be hard to predict a loss, because this is a number that was sent to me yesterday, and then I verified it. Boston Sports Info tweeted it out. Days since their last losing streak of three games or more, quarter of the league is on one right now. So for a quarter of the league, the answer is zero. Here's your top four. The Kansas City Chiefs are number four. They've gone 739 days since they've lost three in a row. New Orleans Saints is third. They've gone a little over 800. The Minnesota Vikings are second. They've gone a remarkable 1,100 days since a three-game losing streak. The New England Patriots have gone 6,225 days since they had a three-game losing streak. The last three-game losing streak they had was the 0-2 season, mm-hmm. when they had that swoon that cost them their playoff spot as defending Super Bowl champions. As critical as I've been about where the Patriots are right now, this is not a team that has a bad month of football, as far as they might look bad for a month, but they don't lose three games in a row. They haven't in nearly 20 years. So no matter who they were playing, you would expect them to win. The fact that they're playing the single worst team in football, and they might have a little scouting edge, I don't know. There were some things going on this week. I expect the Patriots to look like they've looked against awful teams all year, which is dumb.
Back here, first things first, we're now joined by former Pro Bowl running back Brian Westbrook.
What up,
Good morning, Brian.
Big time.
Stayed
nice
up late.
To see you.
Watched the Sixers beat up on the Celtics last night.
Watch anything else?
I watched a little bit of the football game.
A little football, that's good.
A little football, yeah.
Talk to you about that a little bit. Let's talk about your former team, though. First, Brian, the Philadelphia Eagles, they face Washington Sunday, 1 Eastern on Fox. So Philly's offense has been decimated with injuries, but quarterback Carson Wentz says that doesn't mean he has to carry the team. Brian Westbrook, is Wentz right that it's not on him and him alone to carry this Eagles team right now?
Well, no, he's wrong. I think that it is up to him to carry this team. And I think when you pay a quarterback 100 plus million guaranteed money, that's what you expect. You expect him to be able to carry your football team. And that's without the injuries. That's with DeSean Jackson and Nelson Aguilar and Alshon Jeffrey. You still want Wentz to be able to carry the football team. And so now without those guys, he definitely has to be able to carry them. I think you're certainly going to need some help from that defensive side of the ball. But Carson Wentz's job is to carry this football team. He's not the point guard. He's a scoring guy. He's a guy that needs to get 25, 30 points a game. He has to be that guy, especially if this team wants to try to make it into the playoffs and then go further into the playoffs.
Well, B-Dub, I think Colin Cowherd puts it brilliantly when he says there are tractors and there are trailers. And when you're paying a guy $34 million a year, he has to be a tractor. That being, he has to pull everybody along with him. And all the injuries that the Eagles have, especially on the offensive side of the ball, Carson Wentz is going to have to elevate his play in order to make things easier for those guys. Because when you don't have DeSean Jackson in the lineup and you don't have Alshon Jeffrey in the lineup, it is going to be tougher to get production in the passing game. Now, good on the Eagles for having this, the Washington Redskins, and being able to match up against them, a team that doesn't do very well defensively against running backs and tight ends. And you saw Carson Wentz have success against the Giants defense, throwing to his tight ends and his running backs. Boston Scott, a guy came out of nowhere, had a nice day. I think he had right around 70 yards receiving in that game. And then, of course, Carson was able to find Zach Ertz for a couple of scores, especially that late game one, to put them in position to win that game. But, I mean, this has to be a signature Carson Wentz game. If for no other reason, you recognize that the Eagles don't have any margin for error and they have to win every single football game.
Especially because the Eagles' defense, we don't think it because of the travesty in Miami. But in five of their last six games, they've allowed 20 points or fewer. Like, the defense is actually playing far better than it was early in the year. I'm not here to just bang on Carson Wentz, but this to me is an example that he and Doug Peterson have this in common. They have no idea what motivational buttons they're supposed to push, and they are not comfortable in the position they are in right now. Of course Carson Wentz this week, the message should be, guys, I got us. I know we're banged up. I know folks are writing us off. Guess what? I'll take care of it. You do your job, and I will take care of the rest. I hate to reference LeBron, but this is a moment from in the series against the Warriors when they had the big comeback. What he told everyone after Game 5, after they got it to 3-2, was, if you guys just do your role, I will take care of everything else. And it's unfair to compare Carson Wentz to LeBron. I get it. But that is what the quarterback of the team needs to be, especially when, to your guys' point, you paid him to be that guy. You paid him to be your force multiplier and then some. And when you're coming off a game where he needed to play better.
Yeah.
I understand the final 17 minutes in overtime of that game, Carson was good. You had 3 points. 42 minutes into the game against the New York Giants. It's unacceptable. And so I don't think the Eagles' entirety of their problems, I don't even know if it's fair to say the majority of their problems, are on their quarterback. I do think for a guy who's had issues, questions in the locker room, he doesn't yet know how to be that, quote, leader of men that guys such as Russell Wilson seem to come so naturally to. Dak Prescott seems to actually be quite good at that as well. And he's, to me, Carson's grasping in that regard in a game they have to have against Washington.
And it doesn't have to be a rah-rah kind of leader. You don't have to get in front of the mic up at the podium and say, this is how we're going to do it. It's not. Lamar leads, and he's not that vociferous kind of like leader, but he's got everyone in that locker room believing in him, and maybe part of that is because of what he's doing every day on Sunday. But if Carson Wentz is not doing that every Sunday, then he's got to be some semblance of a leader. He's got to show those guys that he's going to take this all on him and go out there and try to win games.
One way to lead your team is, and you're exactly right, is exactly what Lamar is doing. Go out there on the field and dominate. Go out there and be the best player on the field every time you have the football. And Carson Wentz has to understand how to do that for four quarters of a game. The Eagles team has been good coming back from behind. They've been good in the second half of games, but they have to be good for four quarters to be able to win with the lack of production they're getting from the wide receivers. When you look at the last four games, Carson Wentz has over 170 pass attempts. to me, that means you have to be the man. That means you have to be able to throw the ball down the field to win. That's what Doug Peterson is saying. Throw the football to win. Carson Wentz has to be able to understand that. He also has to be able to step into his role as the best person on the field, and he has to be able to win. That's his one thing he has to be able to do.
And he also has to clearly be the best quarterback on the field on Sunday.
Yeah.
He's going up against Dwayne Haskins, that Washington Redskins offense without Darius Geis. I mean, this is a situation where you know that Dwayne Haskins has the tendency to throw the other team the ball and turn the football over. So you have to be able to take advantage of those situations when your defense, if your defense is able to make them one-dimensional, and there's no reason to think that that Eagles defense won't be able to stop that rushing attack for the Redskins with AP, I just feel like if you're going to put it all on, if their defense is putting it all on Dwayne Haskins, you have to make sure that you take advantage of the miscues from the young rookie quarterback. And Carson Wentz, he didn't look like the best quarterback on the field Monday night against that matchup with the Giants when they had Eli Manning as their starting quarterback. So it's a situation where I think Carson Wentz clearly has to be the best offensive player on the field, period.
1,000%. And even if it's false bravado, do that.
Yeah.
Even if deep down you are questioning yourself, you make it, lie to everybody else. And because you are going a quarterback mismatch this much, I understand sometimes we make it too much about the quarterbacks. When it's Dwayne Haskins, well, I understand he's a rookie, but even by rookie standards, he's struggling.
Yes.
He has been really, really bad. You've got the worst starting quarterback in football right now against a guy who's supposed to be an MVP candidate year in, year out. Exude that level of confidence. I'm not the one that needs to carry the team. Everyone needs. That's not what the Eagles need to hear this week against this one.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.